Welcome back to the Root Cause Medicine Podcast. I'm your host for today, Dr. Jessica Christie. So how often do we see patients with symptoms that don't quite fit the pattern? That patient with persistent bloating despite a healthy diet, the child whose eczema keeps returning, the person with chronic fatigue, brain fog, headaches, or unexplained inflammation, even after multiple appointments and seemingly normal testing. Sometimes the challenge isn't that we're missing the symptoms, it's that we're missing the trigger. In today's episode of the Root Cause Medicine Podcast, I'm joined by Veronica Kent, CEO of Olitest Medical Laboratory, and Kristen Trainer, registered dietitian and clinical educator, for a conversation about the immune system, hidden drivers of chronic symptoms, and the role specialized testing can play in uncovering answers. We explore everything from food sensitivities and allergy testing to mold exposure and even alpha-gal syndrome, a condition that's becoming increasingly important as tick-borne illnesses continue to rise. But this conversation isn't really about laboratory testing. It's about clinical detective work. It's about knowing when to look deeper, how to interpret the clues, and why the most valuable test result is often the one that helps move a patient from frustration and uncertainty toward a clear path forward. If you're a practitioner interested in getting to the root cause of complex symptoms, or simply someone who wants to better understand the connection between the immune system, food, environment, and health, this episode is definitely for you. Before we get started, though, I've got a special question for the practitioners in the audience. Practitioners, what if your supplement dispensing, patient education, and treatment planning all lived in one powerful platform built for whole person care? And what if that platform was free for both you and your patients while saving you hours each week on treatment planning and follow-up? Well, meet FullScript, the comprehensive care delivery platform designed to reduce administrative burden and enhance clinical impact. From automated refills and lab ordering with interpretation to evidence-based protocols and built-in adherence support, FullScript integrates the tools you need to streamline care and stay focused on what matters most, your patients. In a recent survey, 74% of providers reported saving up to 3 hours per week using FullScript to create their treatment plans. Are you ready to work smarter and elevate your practice? Visit FullScript.com to get started today. Veronica and Kristen, welcome to the Root Cause Medicine Podcast. I'm so glad you're both here. Before we get started, why don't you both introduce yourselves and let us know why you love doing what you do?
I'm Veronica Kent. I'm the Chief Executive Officer and owner of Olitest Medical Laboratory. I have a laboratory museum outside my office, and I have a picture of my father who started this company in 1980, who passed away 9 years ago. So I feel I've honored his mission. I feel that we are helping people, changing our lives. You know, it's really feels good to come to work. It's exciting. And you know, our goal is to provide unsurpassed testing to our practitioners so that they can do the best to make their patients' lives better. And Kristen is definitely the rock star there.
My name's Kristen, and I'm a registered dietitian at Olitest. I've worked here for over 20 years. I specialize in helping patients with food allergy, food sensitivity, candida. I love my job because I get to help patients feel better and get to the root cause of their problems and give them the opportunity to have my support and learn about, you know, their allergies, sensitivities along the way.
We have so much to talk about, but first, can we talk about all of the testing types that you offer at Olitest?
Okay, so for food allergy and environmental allergy, we have over 600 allergens available. We have 21 environmental customized panels, comprehensive panels of 25 allergens. Then we also do food sensitivity testing because a lot of people don't have that true allergic response where we're looking at, we do food sensitivity IgG, so 96, 184, or 205 foods. We also do it IgA. So we have clinicians that will order both. We do candida testing where we're looking at immunoglobulins, IgG, IgA, and IgM. And why that's important is to find out if you have a new infection, recurring infection. And then we also do an immune complex, which tells you if you actually are having like an antibody antigen response, which is a more systemic candidiasis. Our mold testing is very popular. Our tick-borne testing is really growing right now. So what we do is we stick to our niche. We do immunology testing. We are quantifying antibodies, and we have found that sticking in our niche is probably what we do well.
I love that. We'll definitely speak more to the testing in a little bit.
But first, I have a question for you, Veronica. You mentioned that the company was founded back in 1980. Can you tell us a little bit more about those early days, you know, the types of problems that he was seeing in patient care that really helped him decide that he should open a specialized laboratory?
So what happened in 1980 is a company named Pharmacia Diagnostics, which was originally in Uppsala, Sweden, came out with the first analyzer where you could test for multiple allergies from one tube of blood, quantifying immunoglobulins. So what happened was a lot of doctors at that point in time wanted the technology, but in the United States, we're one of the few countries where we have the clinical laboratories, federal regulations, so that it actually came out of in the 60s, women would have a pap smear in Boston and a pap smear in Los Angeles, and there's no standardization across laboratory testing at that time. So women were dying. So they were like, okay, how could we standardize laboratory testing? So if you got an allergy test at my lab, or if you got it at Quest, we have the same analyzers or LabCorp, that it would be standardized across the industry for patient care. So doctors at that point didn't really want to buy an analyzer and put it in their office because a lot of times they were having their nurses run the tests. So we're a high complexity medical lab. So our regulations are in our personnel. So payroll is one of our highest costs. So we have to have PhDs, technical directors, our lab directors board certified in clinical and anatomic pathology. So doctors weren't really interested in doing that. So they said, I want to use this analyzer, this technology. I think it's great, but I don't want to put a lab in my office. So that was sort of how it evolved.
That's an amazing story. I didn't realize the history there. Now, bring us back more to present day. Has that resolved? Are things different than they were back then?
Well, actually, we still use it. So Pharmacia evolved into Phadia, which is now owned by Thermo Fisher in vitro diagnostic division. So we actually have the more improved analyzers, obviously, load on the fly. So it's a very interesting concept because you have allergists who are paid to do skin testing in their office. But then, you know, not everybody wants to get skin tested. There are also, if you have eczema or other allergy issues, you're not really a good candidate for it. So with the blood test, you don't have to come off your medications. And we can do a lot more with foods that you can't do really with skin testing without the risk.
Veronica, one thing that stood out to me is that you've worn many different hats in this company before becoming the CEO. How has that shaped the way that you've been serving these clinicians?
Well, it's really interesting. And it's funny because our technical director is always like, well, you're an involved donor and you understand, like, I understand the testing. I also, you know, go to a lot of conferences and I deal directly with our clients as Kristen does. So we understand what they need, which is why we came up with our software of like, you know, we have 1,200 foods. Here's what your patient can eat. So a lot of clinicians, it takes a lot of time, especially if they're billing insurance. We don't, we're cash. They only have certain, you know, 15-minute segments where they can see a patient so that we provide the ongoing support for them to help that patient get the best. Because you can order any lab test on a patient, but what they do with the test result, we feel like is the most important thing.
I completely agree. And my follow-up to that is for Kristen. Tell us a little bit more about the relationship between the laboratory experts and clinicians and how you're bridging that gap.
The physicians, they have an opportunity to schedule a call with me as well, because some of the newer providers or even some that may have been working with us for a while always want to refresh or learn about how does this test work? What is our protocol? So basically, when the patient gets the test results, they're classified as class 0, class 1, class 2, and class 3. Class 0 being there's no reaction. Class 1 is a low sensitivity. Class 2 is a moderate sensitivity. And class 3 is a high sensitivity. So we take the time to explain to the providers as well as the patients what the results mean. And going from there is where then we lead into like the wellness plan and how those classes affect your body and what it really means and how to implement these restrictions into your lifestyle, because it's an extremely restrictive diet at first if you've never had experience doing an elimination diet.
That's so important. I completely agree. The test can only do so much, right? It's what you do after the test results come back that matters. A question for you both, since you've been in this field for decades. What has changed the most in allergy and immunology testing?
So for our allergy testing, where you're looking at, you know, we have 5 antibodies in our immune system. And a lot of people, what happened initially is we have IgE. It's a very small amount of circulating antibodies. It's responsible for food, for allergies, food allergy, environmental allergies, whatever it may be. Then we have IgG, which is your largest circulating antibody. It's more an inflammatory marker. It's the only antibody that passes through the placenta from mother to child. So every baby is born with their mother's IgG is their first immunity. Then we have IgM, your first responder to an immune response. IgA is your mucosal barrier. It's your most made antibody. It's in your saliva. So if you think of it as guarding your body entrances. So with IgE, we're looking at acute allergic reactions. So a lot of people are convinced they have a food allergy. But basically, 10 foods probably account for 90% of all allergic food reactions. So you need a good patient history from the doctor and different things. As far as with food allergy, what has come out that's the newest thing is component resolved diagnostics. It's called molecular allergology. Say you're allergic to, say, peanut. Well, peanut's made up of 6 different proteins that make up the whole allergen of peanut. So you could be positive to peanut, the allergen, but then we can dial that down to a molecular level and say, well, you have, they're called ARH9, 6 different numbers. But 2 of them mean you have a heat liable allergy, meaning you'll have a systemic reaction. The other 4 mean you have a cross reacting birch or soy allergy, and you don't really have a peanut allergy. So the same thing, like with dogs, we can dial down a dog allergy to 5 components. But one of those components, and this is a real quality of life thing for people, Arcan F5 is actually a protein expressed in the prostate of a male dog. So if that was what you were allergic to in the dog allergen, you could have a fixed dog, a female dog. So there's a lot of knowledge you can gain from molecular allergies.
Yeah, and I definitely think that people's awareness has really increased. You know, food is the fuel to your body. What you fuel it with is how you feel. And people want to feel good. They don't want to just take medication and mask their symptoms. They're realizing that food is, we need it. It can also be bad for you. And so I think more providers as well as patients are now really open to food sensitivity testing and healing their gut and feeling better and overall well-being.
That's why we brought in IgG food sensitivity testing. Is initially we had patients calling saying the food allergy test is wrong. It's all negative. I'm like, nope, that's like a cell phone to a cell phone charger. If you have circulating IgE to that, that test is like 99% accurate. No test is 100%. So good news, you don't have a food allergy, but we're not saying you're not having an immune response to foods. So with IgG, we're looking at larger panels of 96, 184, 205 foods. Kristen's looking to make a customized wellness plan. So you have enough choices and a shopping list where you know, try it for 2 weeks. You're going to feel better.
Yes, that's the whole thing. 99% of patients feel better.
So here's the thing about IgG food sensitivity testing, as opposed to like food allergy testing. So with food allergy testing, we expect anything from a class 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that you would have a clinically significant reaction. With food sensitivity testing, class does not necessarily correlate to symptoms because there are other factors playing in. There's environmental allergies, like if it's ragweed season and you drink milk or eat melons, that will heighten your response to the ragweed because the epitopes in your immune system don't recognize it.
This is fascinating and the perfect segue. So can you explain the elimination diet a little more for folks who may not have ever given that as a protocol to their patients? And then can you also talk about if it's possible to reintroduce those foods and how that all works?
Sure. So the elimination diet begins when the patient gets their test results. Usually they give me a call and we discuss their results and kind of, you know, go over the wellness plan. And the elimination diet is a 12-week period where they're removing any class 1, 2, or 3 food that they're positive to, which meaning they're showing a sensitivity to. And that lasts 12 weeks. So after that 12 weeks, we start to reintroduce the class 1 foods first. So they would pick a food, let's say banana, which would be a class 1 food. They would try that on Monday. They would wait 4 days to see if they have a symptom. If they don't have a symptom, they can incorporate that back into their diet on a rotation basis, meaning like every 4 days. But if they do have a symptom, you'd wait the 4 days, then try the banana again. And let's say your symptom was eczema. If you notice your eczema is getting worse, you'd remove the banana from the patient's diet because you've pinpointed when they have that particular food, that's what's causing their symptoms.
And Kristen customizes their results. So you're going to get a bound booklet in the wellness plans. And then you get a 2-page shopping list out of our huge database so that we can give you a lot of different options.
And they get a consultation with me as well.
So it sounds like it's so personalized, which is what patients need. That's amazing.
Yeah, and sometimes we'll do like the family because there might be more than one kid that has the testing as well as the parents, and the results may vary. So I work with the family to provide them with meal ideas in a shopping list that works for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine having a family with a couple of kids and everyone's trying to eat different foods and just how tough that would be. I love that you do that for patients. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about another big topic these days, mold-related illness. What types of patient presentations make you think that this type of testing might be warranted?
So a lot of times you'll have doctors will call their patients are having respiratory problems. They see mold in their house. They have skin issues, all these other types of things. So we're looking at the most toxic mold. So we're looking at IgE to see if you have a mold allergy. Then we're looking at IgG, which is exposure to mold. The issue with IgG is the half-life. IgG has 4 subclasses, 1 through 4. The half-life of that antibody is 25 to 28 days. So it can stay elevated for quite a while after you've had exposure, if you have continued exposure. So then we also look at IgA, which is, you know, guardian, your most made antibody, but it has a 6 life half day. So we know if you're positive IgA-wide, obviously you're breathing it in. It's in your mucosa. That's basically what we're doing for testing. And then we provide a mold elimination plan, which basically defines all the molds we test for, where they can be found in your environment. So maybe the doctor's giving the patient supplements, but if they're getting re-exposed every day, so maybe they just have to take like their houseplants outside, move the wood pile further away. So if we can reduce exposure, that's just going to help the patient.
Yeah, and even like, believe it or not, mold grows in fridge, like your fridge, AC, and your vents. So people think, you know, leftovers are good, but if you're eating leftovers all the time and you're not cleaning the fridge, your fridge could be a source of mold growth.
And a lot of doctors discuss like mycotoxin testing for molds. But here's the thing. If you could get that mold issue under control for your patient at an antibody level when you have elevated antibodies, instead of waiting for them to excrete the byproduct of toxic mold in their urine and mycotoxin testing, which has come into question lately as far as accuracy because foods contain mycotoxins, mushrooms, different things, then you can get your patient on a quicker road to recovery.
So you guys are doing a blood test for mold testing.
We're testing serum. So we're quantifying antibody levels. So it's all serum testing.
Fascinating. Okay, I would love to bring up a different topic that I'm hearing more and more about. Alpha-gal syndrome, a tick-borne illness that leads to an allergy to mammalian products. And I know while awareness has certainly increased, many cases are still missed. So what are some red flags that you think should prompt a clinician to consider testing in this area?
A lot of patients do get missed in that area. And a lot of it too is education of clinicians, but they just don't know about it. I was actually at European Allergy in Finland 15 years ago, and I met Thomas Platz-Mills. He's the physician who actually discovered that you could have this allergy that came from this Lone Star tick. He's at the University of Virginia. And if you got bit by this tick, it injects alpha-galactose into you. And then what will happen is, so recently a pilot here just died from having a cheeseburger. You develop this, because we're not meant to have alpha-galactose in our bodies. It's a sugar. So that you then become allergic to something you've eaten all along. And a lot of things people should know about it too is like people will actually make themselves sicker by taking like Tylenol or different, like 70% of the medications in the US are in gelatin caplets, which contain mammalian products.
Yeah. Almost anybody who gets bit by a tick should have the alpha-gal test. Because as Ronnie was talking about that pilot, he was at the airport eating just a hamburger. And he died. He had no idea he was suffering from alpha-gal.
Wow. So just from the beef, what are these mammalian products that you're testing?
It's all mammalian products. So what we test for in our panel is we're looking at beef. We're looking at cheddar cheese, gelatin, lamb. So all red meats, pork. And then we're looking at goat's milk, cow's milk, and sheep's milk. And then we're also looking at a total IgE to make sure we're not missing anything that you have circulating. It's hard for people to diagnose, and some of these people end up going to repeated, you know, episodes at the emergency room, and nobody's picking it up.
So with alpha-gal syndrome, how long does it take to develop an allergy?
It would develop into an allergy immediately, and we're testing specifically for the alpha-galactose sugar. So that's when you would pick it up, and then we do see, you know, If you have that, obviously you should stay off red meats. I do know one nurse that did sublingual immunotherapy and eventually was able to have beef again. I don't know. You knew some patients?
Yeah. There is an opportunity after being strict removal of the, you know, most red meat that you could possibly have it again. But the whole thing is, why do you want to chance it? You want to know. You want to get the test because you need to know, you know, is this a possibility?
Yes, absolutely. What are the other tests or panels that are consistently underutilized by integrative and functional practitioners?
So we have a consultant who is a clinician, a Dr. Mona Morstein. So she's done work with our lab for over 25 years. She's actually a friend of mine also. And she taught at Southwest Naturopathic College, gastroenterology and nutrition. And what she does with all her patients, if they come back positive on a 184 food panel to gluten and wheat, she feels that it's the responsibility of the clinician to actually test that patient for celiac disease. And if they're positive to celiac disease, then they should test the whole family because it is hereditary. So we do feel that's underutilized. A lot of celiac disease goes undiagnosed.
One of the biggest populations that we test is people who suffer from autoimmune conditions, because almost anybody who is suffering from autoimmune condition is more sensitive to food sensitivities, mm-hmm. to be honest. Those are the people that, like, people have Hashimoto's, like removing gluten and dairy, foods that cause inflammation within their body.
People are really looking, who have autoimmune diseases, to control their inflammation so that they don't have flare-ups.
Great point on that. And of course, testing is only part of the equation. Let's talk about turnaround time, which might seem like an operational detail, but it can have a huge impact on both practitioners and patients. Why does something like turnaround time matter so much?
Because if the patient's getting a test, they want the result. So we actually have the best turnaround time in the industry. Our turnaround time is 3 to 5 business days. Because we are not batching tests. We are setting up testing. We set up testing 6 days a week. And we also set up testing overnight 2 days. So we aren't saying like, oh, like this panel, we're only going to run on Mondays because we don't have enough volume for it. We're setting up testing 6 days a week. And our thing is always like this, get it in the door, get it out the door.
So Alitest has developed a reputation for exceptional customer service. What does that look like?
We have a customer service department, and it's kind of, we answer the phone. So when you call and you need a test result, you're going to answer the phone. So people would always be like, what's Robin look like? What's Karen look like? So then we started doing a company Christmas card with everyone, because these people develop, I mean, we have customer loyalty. We've had clinicians who've used us for over 30 years. So they deal with these same women in customer service. So, I mean, sometimes when they answer the phone, they're like, oh, it's not recorded. So we have exceptional customer service, which I think helps us retain employees. And then also we haven't had any deficiencies in over a dozen years of lab inspections. So our technical directors are always available if doctors have any kind of questions that we can't answer regarding technology or different things.
Yeah, and providers always get the answer. They're never left hanging or waiting. We get the answer and we get it to them in a very timely manner.
That's certainly something to be proud of. Another thing that really stood out to me is your record of more than a decade without laboratory inspection deficiencies. What does it take to maintain that level of quality year after year?
It takes a lot. But our laboratory director, Dr. Dana Semmel, she's also a College of American Pathologists inspector, as is our technical director, Glenn Bucci. So we run this place inspection ready. I mean, it's really a lot of documentation. A lot of labs get cited for deficiencies as far as actually its personnel requirements are usually the largest problem. So we use software to maintain, you know, is your proficiency testing, you know, like say your bi-yearly, you know, proficiency supervision of, you know, attack to make sure they're doing it correctly. They all have to have bachelor's degrees in chemistry, biology, laboratory sciences, and they have to be monitored and pass all these different proficiencies. When we hire a new lab tech, they don't actually run patient samples for a couple months, and they start out at a very small amount.
Wow. That's a lot of work.
We have a great laboratory team. Two of the women that work in our lab, actually, their mother, Lillian, was my father's original laboratory supervisor in 1980.
Oh, no way.
And the daughters still work here.
There's a lot of employees that are very loyal to Alitest that have worked here for a long time. Yeah, that's what makes it so special. It's a family here.
Yeah, that certainly says a lot about a company and the culture. I love that. You often talk about being inspection ready every day. So what does that actually look like behind the scenes?
Behind the scenes, I mean, it's like from the moment the samples come in the door, you know, we have chain of custody, how they're opened, how they're accessioned. You know, it's also looks like, you know, lab coats, you know, cell phones in the lab, gloves, you know, different things like that, just down to the total basics that they're, you know, paying attention, recognize, you know, we'll have our PhD who works at night, Dr. Mo, if he notices something, he's like, I'm going to look at this QC or whatever. We have a 40,000 square foot building, but if you had a question, you can go through any lab in here and ask it. So the techs can go into manufacturing or whatever and say, this doesn't look right. So that there's communication at that level.
What are three things that you think everyone is getting wrong about food allergy tests?
The nomenclature itself, food allergy versus food sensitivity, people don't really understand what they're testing for. And that's clinicians also. Because with food sensitivity testing, you can reintroduce those foods. With food allergy testing, you're most likely going to have to avoid them.
That's the biggest reason. And I also think that people think that you can't have a food allergy if you're 30 years old. You can grow into food allergies. Your body changes. If you're under stress or having autoimmune conditions, you can now suffer from food allergies. So it's very important to get tested. But you can also grow out of food allergies as well, just like children. And that's why it's really important that they have strict avoidance from these foods.
So I have three children, five grandchildren. Kristen has a two-year-old daughter, and we talk about this often because exposure builds the immune system. So in this country, what happens is we're like, don't give your child tree nuts till they're three. Don't give them peanuts till you're two. That was the most wrong advice that could have been given to people because they had never had exposure. So then we are exploding with these allergy problems because children weren't exposed. And Kristen can speak more to that because her daughter Olivia eats everything.
Yes, the trend has changed. Now we know. Introduce the allergenic foods early. That's going to help. Unfortunate patients that did not do that, they're the ones that are now suffering from potential lifelong food allergies.
Exposure induces tolerance.
Yeah. So the sooner you get tested or the sooner you try the food, and if you suspect there's a symptom, the sooner you should get tested.
What's one thing you wish the general public would stop doing in the food allergy testing world?
I think that the general public, I think there's a lot of, and we deal with this a lot at Allertest. So we are not a direct-to-consumer laboratory. We deal with clinicians. We don't want to deal with patients. We've dealt with companies that are direct to consumer. They don't always understand how laboratories work. And a lot of patients get that test result back and still have to go to their doctor. And we find that patients should go to their provider so that they get the most out of their test result.
Yeah. And something else to chime in on, not all doctors will order a food allergy test. So if a patient or they can't find a provider, call us. We will find you a provider that will do food allergy testing for yourself or your loved one. Because I do know my friend, for instance, she really suspected her child was suffering from food allergies, but the doctor refused to actually test the child, which makes no sense. Why not rule out food allergies?
What are some of the most common food allergies?
So it's soy, wheat, fish, shellfish.
Cow's milk.
Strawberries,
corn.
Alpha-gal actually is coming up now. That tick-borne allergy is actually, they're looking at to put that on labeling also.
Oh, and beef too.
Tree nuts, peanuts. Yep.
We have an allergy panel. It's the top 12 food allergies. That's our most common panel.
Now you'll see, like I could have told you 15 years ago, coconut was an up-and-coming allergy. Because coconut is in all your body products. So the more exposure people are getting to it, the more they're reacting. We see trending up now kelp, seaweed, gets a filler in a lot of different foods.
The carrageen, yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the healthy foods contain it.
Are there ways to get past a food allergy?
Depends. So that part, I would say, is provider driven. Because we are here as a resource for the patient. But the provider would want to make the executive decision, this is the right time. You'd want to retest before ever trying a food that a patient was allergic to. but they would have to build that relationship with the provider over time. And, you know, hopefully the provider would feel as though it's the right time for the patient to reintroduce that particular food. You see it in kids a lot, but strict avoidance is how you get to have that food again.
So we see, like, in Europe, Europe's been doing sublingual immunotherapy for over 30 years. And what we see here in the U.S. is we are providing allergy shots. But if you think of the patient compliance level, especially allergy shots for food allergies are pretty dangerous. But allergy shots for environmental allergies work. And by, you know, reducing any of that load on the immune system can actually help other allergies that the patient has. So now in the U.S., if you wanted to do sublingual immunotherapy, the only difference between allergy shots is they're in saline when you get a shot into your humoral system. But if you do drops and they're in glycerin, so, and they have, there's a much lower level of reaction because you're taking a totally different induction into your immune system through your dendritic cells in your mouth and IgA. So that people will find that within, say they start at one drop a week, two drops, three, and then within 3 months, they're usually at maintenance. But then they have to stay on the drops for 3 to 5 years to actually dial it down and actually get rid of, like, those killer memory cells and everything in your immune system. So there is treatment, but if we have a doctor asking about it, we deal with some companies that do it. We usually advise that they should start with environmental allergies first because there is cross-reactivity with foods and inhalant allergens, and see what they get there before they touch the foods. They're much more dangerous, yeah.
So yes, on the cross-reactivity, there's a syndrome called oral allergy syndrome, which means you could have an inhalant allergy, for instance, to like birch tree. So when you have oral allergy syndrome, you have an environmental allergy, but there's also foods that cross-react with that particular allergen that exacerbates your symptoms when you consume it. So for instance, a patient, they might have an allergy to dust mites, but when they eat shrimp, their mouth and their face get bright red and they're symptomatic. It's because they have an allergy to dust mites, but dust mites cross-reacts with shellfish. So it's important to understand your food allergies, right, as well as your environmental allergies and the cross-reactivity between the two of them.
Especially with birch, is like the largest super profilin family in nature. So if you eat an apple, you're going to get that itchy throat because the birch pollen's on the apple. But that doesn't mean, and patients will be like, but my throat gets itchy. But that doesn't mean you're having a systemic immune reaction.
Exactly. Same thing with like latex. It cross-reacts with like avocados, bananas, kiwi.
But patients have a lot more power than they think in that way. And we provide cross-reactivity tables also.
Yes.
When you think about the next 5 to 10 years, what developments in allergy and immunology testing are you most excited for?
A lot of things coming out about the microbiome we're excited for. We're excited that we're actually developing a new technology here at Allitest. So more like lab on a chip, as opposed to plates and tubes, so that we'll need a smaller sample size. So we've been working on that for a couple of years. We validated our first panel, which is a 96. And there are some genetics coming out in allergy. So, but we also have other opportunities that are coming our way that are capillary blood, but more serum.
And the good thing is we do finger stick.
Right.
Testing, which patients love.
I love how easy the finger stick testing is. It's a great option for those who can't or don't want to have a full blood draw. So finally, for practitioners who want to learn more about Allitest, the testing options, the educational resources, where should they go?
So our website is foodallergy.com.
Well, that's easy to remember.
Yeah, we got that in the 1990s for like $199. So that's... That was a good pickup. Yeah. And then our phone number is 800-225-5404. And they'll get one of the women in customer service or a gentleman, and then they can direct them to whoever can help them.
Thank you both so much for being here today and being so generous with your time. I know that everyone listening is going to get a lot of value out of that conversation.
Great. Thank you for having us. Yes, we feel very fortunate and blessed that we get to come to work every day and love what we do.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We're so glad you're here. Before you go, we'd love your help spreading this message of whole person care. Our goal is to bring this education to more practitioners for free, and you can make a huge difference. If you liked today's episode, leave us a 5-star review. We read every single one. Drop a comment and let us know what resonated with you. or share this episode with a friend or colleague who might enjoy it. One important note, the views expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and the guests, and they don't necessarily reflect the views of Fullscript or any affiliated organizations. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and it's not intended to be medical advice. For your safety, always check with your healthcare provider before making any changes to your healthcare routine. We'll catch you next time on the Root Cause Medicine Podcast.